Welcome along. So Euro 2021 is almost upon us. I call it Euro 2021 because it's the European Championships and it's been played in 2021. And I haven't produced a load of merchandise I've got sitting around in a warehouse in China from 18 months ago. Now, it's a sign of strength if a nation has enough players to name multiple squads that could compete at a major tournament. And Spain are currently knocking it out of the park. No other nation is running four. The actual squad, the emergency bubble squad, the kids who beat Lithuania, and the hated by Luis Enrique squad. So many of his choices are reasonable, but seem to have been stumbled on at the last minute. If that's what you wanted, then why haven't you planned for it? We'll see whether Terry fancies having a go at the starting 11 for the first game. Can they win it? Yes, because coaches and video analysts haven't yet taken all of the joy out of football and reduced it to the predictable state of rugby. And to all of those people from other parts of the world where you've never watched rugby, well done, you should consider yourselves lucky. We'll have a look at the best of the rest and see who else might win Euro 2021 as well. And of course, speaking of shambles, we'll catch up with what's happening at Barcelona, where they've got the one Dutchman they didn't really want and the others are slipping away from their grasp.
And the most expensive scout in the history of football in the world, who's been sacked a year and still claiming his money and expenses. Yeah. So it's 750 grand. A year for a scout in Brazil. It's incredible. I mean, I don't know how that slips through the net. I had a tweet from Shane McCaffrey saying, Terry, you could have done with that kind of dough when you were in Malaga. I think all the other scouts at Barcelona on 70 grand a year, which is a lot of money for a scout. But I don't know the guy's name, 750,000.
Yeah. And they don't need to pay these guys 70 grand because they only sign players that we've all heard of. They didn't need to scout Griezmann and Coutinho.
And it gets expenses as well on top of that. It was signed off by Bartomeu and we wonder why Barcelona is a basket case at the moment. So we have to be careful we don't criticise the current regime, but we can hammer the previous one.
You can hammer the previous one. Let's do Barcelona now. We'll get to the Euros in a bit. So
sorry, I jumped.
Yeah, no, but at the same time, you have to. The current one. I know it's a difficult job, and so you always have to have that little asterisk by it. But they still have huge decisions to make, don't they? Some really, really important ones. When it looks now like Wijnaldum's going to PSG because they're paying twice as much money. I don't blame the guy for that particularly.
Exactly. He's 30 years of age.
Yeah.
He's leaving Liverpool. He's obviously been well paid and he's going to get well paid. He's not going to
China, is he? He's still going to be playing Champions
League.
But I
also applaud Barcelona not competing.
Yeah. Well, most of the fans' view was that. Because when I mentioned that on Twitter, most fans said, to be honest, we'd rather not go into that kind of signing. Because people think a free transfer means free still, don't they? But they're not, are they? It costs a fortune, transfer, because you've got to pay.
And it's a premium.
Fee. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a premium to be paid to the player instead of the club. It's not as much as buying a player directly from another club, but I think it was the right decision for Barcelona. He's a good player. I think it would have been an asset to Barcelona, but there are other players.
Yeah.
And you know, if you suddenly, I think I read it's double the offer.
You're
best just walking away from it.
And also, as a player, because some people say, oh, you're a mercenary, but I'm always wary. If I was an agent or a player, I'd be very wary of signing for a club who seem to want you because you're cheap.
Yeah.
Because then you think, well, what's your plan here? Because, you know, is it beyond Barcelona to sign up very talented, high-profile midfielder and never play him? Ask Pjanic.
Could happen.
And he's got this book value of 70 million and they still didn't seem to want him or have a plan for what to do with him. So,
And there's a shortage of managers around Europe at the moment, isn't there? Which hence is why clearly Barcelona were looking elsewhere and like a lot of other clubs, they're finding themselves in the same position. Couldn't choose one. So elected to stay with Koeman. I don't think it's the worst decision in the world. I think for three quarters of the season, he was more than adequate. And there seemed to be a plan with the younger players coming in. Not all managers would have done that. There were other options where he could have played senior pros ahead of the likes of Pedri and Araujo and Mingueza. But it fell away at the end of the season. So you could make a case for arguing that he deserves a second season. So it'd be interesting to see what happens behind the scenes, who's brought in, who leaves. Depay is another one that seems to be heavily linked with Barcelona.
But now there's talk of Juve, I think, trying to nick it, trying to nick the deal with a bigger offer.
And again, I wouldn't think that would be a major disappointment to Barcelona if they lose him, having signed Aguero. They've already got Griezmann. And Martin Braithwaite is there. Messi plays up front. It's not a position now that they're lacking in terms of numbers. If Depay comes, where are they going to fit him in?
Yeah, because I mean,
it's all about the sales, isn't it,
for Barca? We fans love to talk, and we're guilty, of course, of talking about who's coming in. Everyone wants to talk about who's signing, but it's about getting rid of players at Barcelona, isn't it? Properly.
Exactly.
So not paying them a fortune, not paying them a fortune and leaving to a title rival who then goes on to win the title. As if that could happen.
Or paying half, three quarters of their wages to be on loan somewhere else as well, which is they need to move players out, loan with a guaranteed purchase or a permanent transfer.
But it's hard, isn't it? Because
really hard.
Dembele's out of contract. Dembele, in my mind, only just signed for Barcelona, but he's a year away from being out of contract, isn't he?
Yeah.
Because we're still waiting for his. It's always this process of waiting for his career to get going.
So, is it three seasons now?
Yeah. That'd be right, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yep, so they obviously got him on a 4-year deal.
Yeah.
Unlike John Moncayola this week, who signed a 10-year contract at Osasuna. Holding the shirt number up with 2031 on the back. And I thought, what does that mean? And then I read the article. What? 10-year deal at Osasuna.
Yeah. Not seen since Alan Pardew signed a 10-year contract at Newcastle.
I don't get it from both parties. I mean, it's hell of a chance from Osasuna. I think he's a player that I really admire. I think he's going to be the potential to be a really good player. But if he was the type, I don't think he is. This is not an accusation I'm making against him. But there are a number of players that I've played with, that I've watched over the years, that might knock off with a 10-year deal in the bag.
Well, remember Winston Bogarde?
Yep.
The Dutch, they
knocked him off as well.
Boy. Yeah,
they
yeah.
both knocked each other off, didn't they?
Yeah.
They didn't want him. He didn't want to play. He didn't want to go anywhere else. And everyone just forgot about him for a while.
Yeah. And in those days, he was paid about 40 grand a week or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And in those days, that was an awful lot of money. But and everyone just,
Go back to, I think he went back to Holland, didn't he? And just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Live
off the huge, vast sum of money that you're being paid to do nothing.
Yeah. So a 10-year deal there are clauses. There must be clauses in it. I think there's a clause for relegation. Yeah. 8 million, I think, the buyout clause. I think it's 25 if they're in the top division. But it's still a huge risk for player and club. I joked he's a lifer. He'd be looking at parole in 6 years, trying to plead his case to be released and go to Athletic Bilbao. But I think that's what it's all designed for. They wanted him, Athletic Bilbao.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me, and that's a short podcast, if they paid the 25 million.
Yeah.
It's just the case of Osasuna not letting him go for 12 to Athletic. So, but the 4-year deal for Dembele obviously wasn't long enough. Now they're into dangerous territory where Laporte is threatening him with sign a new contract, we sell you, or you spend a year in the reserves, which isn't going to happen. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Right. So shall we have a look at the Euros then? So let's do Spain because we talk about La Liga here. We'll have a quick look at the rest though, because it's not all about Spain. The Euros, we'll come back and do some Euro chat throughout the tournament. Shambles, Terry, isn't it? I mean,
it's not their fault.
Right. Some of it is, isn't it? So let's talk about the current shambles, which is the fear of the vaccine. No, sorry, not the vaccine, sorry, the virus. Get that right. We'll get banned off all social media. The fear of the virus, and obviously Busquets positive test.
Yeah,
fingers crossed. So far, it's all looking good for everybody else, isn't it?
Diego Llorente is positive.
Oh right,
as well.
Okay. Sorry, right, okay. I hadn't seen that. So
there is two of them now.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, but this was always the fear of this tournament, wasn't it?
I'm pretty sure Spain won't be the only team that suffer.
Yeah.
I'd be amazed if this is the only outbreak during this competition. So it is tough. I mean, all the teams are going into this with far less preparation than they normally do. And the fact you lose one of your friendlies is a disadvantage. So it's something that, you know, all the international managers going into this competition would have been dreaded. And unfortunately for Spain, it's them that are suffering the consequences at the moment.
Yeah. Now, so actually thinking about this, it almost reduces it back, because I thought my criticism of Luis Enrique is a lack, as I said at the top, a lack of planning. The actual squad that is picked, there's not a player in there, Eric Garcia, perhaps, but you know, there's not a player in there you think he's awful. Dama Traore would be a classic example.
Yeah,
got magnificent qualities, but you've known that for a couple of years. So if you think he's important to the squad, why not have had him around the squad more?
Much more, exactly.
Sarabia is 29, four caps. Yep. So yep. If you were thinking, if there was a possibility of taking him to this tournament, why hasn't he been around? Why hasn't he been playing?
Exactly.
So
yeah, I agree with you. The makeup of the squads is, I mean, they've got two right backs that don't play right back.
Mm.
That's what we spoke about on a previous podcast. So the makeup of the squad is what it is. I think there's a decent enough team there. But my theory going into this tournament for all the nations, everyone's debating who's going to start for England. I promise you, further down the line, if a team gets to the final, they won't be playing the same players that start the first game.
No,
it's just not going to happen. It's a totally different competition than what we've ever seen before because of the amount of games players have played this season. And we're talking the teams that are likely to go far in this competition. They all have players that play for major clubs in Europe. Therefore, they've played a lot more games in European football, Champions League, Europa League. They've all played the internationals during the season. So I think durability is going to be as much of a factor in this competition as quality. And now my theory is if you've got a squad of 23, 24, 25, 26, whichever you've named, you need to, at some stage, they're all playing three games in a week to start with. So it would be really advantageous to anyone if they can win their first two games and rest players in their third game. I think that would be more advantageous than winning the group in this instance, because I think if you could rest a lot of players in the third game, having already qualified in the top two, then your main team will have a week's break rather than 3 or 4 days. I think that would be, whereas normally in a tournament, the players, they're stretched because they've all had long seasons, but this season was shorter, crammed in. Two-game preparation before they go into the tournament. I don't know how each individual nation has prepared. I know England got together, had a break, got back together again. So it's an unusual set of circumstances. So the team with the strongest depth in terms of quality throughout their squad, where a manager can rotate more than they've ever done in these international competitions, I think will benefit. And that's why I think France will win it.
Feasibly, you could win and draw your first two games, have 4 points. You'd have to do the maths because you can, if all the teams in a group have 4 points, you can finish bottom of your group. But once you've got 4 points, if you finish third, you're definitely through. I think it would be bizarre it's not technically.
It's only eight teams fail to go through, isn't there?
Yeah. So four of the third place teams go through. So you've got a good chance of going through. And England have got this weird situation where England don't want to win the group because then you end up playing someone from that group of death whoever finished third in that first group, I think is the possibility of that. I think it's that way around.
Germany, Portugal or France.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Hungary.
Yeah. It's all due respect to Hungary.
Yeah.
So my view is that there are two ways of looking at two things that go into the health of your chances of winning an international tournament. One is the long term. Are you producing enough players? I would currently give Spain probably an A- for that. They're not as good as they were 2008, 2010, 2012. Not as good a set of players as that.
Definitely.
But still, you know, there aren't many better. Yeah. France, I'll agree with you, are better. But I can't. And then they're on a par with the others, probably.
I think there's maybe six teams.
Yeah.
Potential winners.
Yeah.
I've looked at their squads and it's hard to for me, France are favourites because they've got a strong 11 and strength right throughout the squad. If there are injuries, COVID, if Deschamps wants to rotate, I don't see a weakness anywhere. So I think that's why, it's not just the 11 for me, it's the squad. And that's why I think that France, everyone's got players. I mean, if Mbappe was injured, that's a massive loss. I mean, Griezmann's playing well for France. He looks a different player when he pulls on the French shirt. He would be a loss to them. Kante would be a loss to them. So every club, every team's got them. But they do have decent replacements to come in, because all teams are going to suffer in that during this tournament, which makes it a little bit more bizarre why Harry Maguire's gone, to be honest. In terms of, he's still not training with the rest of the group. I know he might be fit in a week or two's time, but he wouldn't have played for a month, 5-6 weeks. That makes it, although it's a bigger squad than normal, you're going to need them during this competition.
So do you think, because normally with a 23-man squad, there's a couple of players who don't get played, aren't there? Especially, yeah. Obviously, if you get knocked out after three games, it's a different matter. So do you think, can you see all 26 players being used in squads? Obviously not playing.
Probably not, but at least the option is there.
Yeah, not the spare keepers. Yeah,
yeah. No, so I think that there'll be more players used in this competition, just because the managers are going to have to gauge how their players can repair after one game and then playing another one 3 days later. So I think that will... We don't normally see the rotation in these competitions. We do in club football. I think this is the first time we're going to see it in the internationals. But it's always difficult for a manager to choose to do that, isn't it? Especially an international manager, because it's not something they normally do. But I think they have to gauge, how difficult season Kante, for instance, has had, how hard he's worked, and then he'll go at it for the first game, he'll go at it for the second, you rest him for the third if you're through. Possibly, is that temptation there to keep playing the same players, knowing that when you get to the knockout stages, they're not going to be as fresh as you would hope, because they're not going to be. So it's a real dilemma for the managers in this
competition. What would you do if you were Roberto Martinez with Eden Hazard? I suppose you need to see his medical reports and how he's training, I guess.
If he's 100% fit, I would ease him into it, to be honest. I would resist the temptation to start him. I don't think that would be wise. But if you was to give him 20 minutes in the first game, half an hour in the second, maybe start him in the third, if things have gone according to plan, and then take it from there. But there is, we did see signs at the end. I think there was an issue with his injury that no one could get to the bottom of. And I think Real Madrid and he feels that they've found a solution. Sometimes it's just diagnosis, the wrong diagnosis. Even at clubs as big as Real Madrid, they can fail to diagnose the injury, what's causing all of his injuries. I believe they think they've got to the bottom of it. So mentally, he would be better as well. And of course, quality-wise, I still long to see the day where he's the star that we thought he was going to be at Real Madrid. And it's possible.
Yeah. Hazard, Bale, Benzema, all up front. Oh, Benzema's got. If it's a big if, isn't it? But then you are talking Champions League winning battle, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's not impossible to see now, is it? I think Ancelotti has known enough about how good Hazard has been in the Premier League. He's had recent knowledge of Gareth Bale back in the Premier League. He knows they can both play. There's no doubt they can both play. My concern with both is injuries, of course. Are we going to see Hazard fully fit and play 50 games, 40 games next year and be at his best? It appears to be a long shot, but I hope it is the case. And Gareth Bale is the issue there for me is no criticism whatsoever of him as a player or as a personality. I know he gets ripped to pieces by the Spanish media. My criticism, my one doubt would be I get worried when I hear, even when he was at Spurs, them saying he can't play every 3 or 4 days. Why not? Yeah. If that's the case, pack it up now. He's not ancient by any means. And if he's not physically capable of performing his duties as a professional footballer, which are to play like Messi, to play like Ronaldo, to play like Toni Kroos and Luka Modric, and those players there now and over the years, the previous ones, Xavi and Iniesta, people like that, that played 50, 60 games a year every year. If he can't do that, then that's a problem for him and Real Madrid, and one that, to be honest, he should be honest with. You can't have a player that's paid that amount of money that breaks every 3 or 4 days. You know, can't play. Oh, I can play 1 week. I can't train this week. And that's the problem that Ancelotti's got to resolve. If Bale can do it, that front three is an elite front three that isn't better than anywhere in Europe.
Yeah. Right, back to the tournament. So Belgium got a chance. So the teams that you're going to say, Belgium, Italy, Germany.
Yes.
And that's not just based on old-fashioned sentiment, is it?
No, actually good, I looked at their squads. Yeah. They've got a chance. Yep, they have. And I know Germany are having some troubles, but you look at the players in their squad, they are still quality. And it's all about getting the run together in a month.
Yeah. You
know? And they've got the players there that can, that know how to win tournaments, know how to play against top-level players. Manager on his last hurrah. They've got, you know, still quality there that they can win the tournament.
Obviously, Portugal, who you commentated on last night for Sky?
Not sure.
Right.
Not sure about Portugal. In the past, I've liked Portugal because they've had Ronaldo up front, who's a match winner, and they've built their success on being hard to beat. They've never really played expansive football. They've had good players, but they've relied on Ronaldo and they've relied on being excellent at the back defensively, hard working in midfield. It's kind of, I'm not sure how strong they are at the back now. Three central defenders in the squad. Ruben Dias is a given, that he's, everyone knows he's quality. Pepe is 38. Jose Font is 37. That's it. That's their only three central defenders. Danilo can play there, a push, the midfield player. But I do, then when you see them in midfield and attack, they're more expansive than they've ever been. So I think it might be a slightly different Portugal to what we've seen in the past. You know, so I think where they've relied on Ronaldo to get the odd goal, he's got 104 international goals, but in tournament football, he can be the one player that makes the difference. Whereas now I'm not so sure they're going to be that solid at the back. So it might be a slightly different Portugal. They have a chance. I won't write them off.
João Félix, how important is he to them? And
No. But he's still young. I mean, he's a young player, but I think that I commentated on the game. He weren't in the squad. He was not stripped to play. So there must be a little injury doubt. Not doubt, but an injury issue that they're taking precautions with. But it was Jota, Bruno Fernandes and Ronaldo playing up front. Bernardo Silva. So I don't see where João Félix fits into that, because that's enough. Ruben Neves, they've got enough attacking quality. So, you know, it's going to be difficult for him to have a major impact in this tournament.
How was Ronaldo?
36.
Right.
It's an ageing squad.
Yes.
36, right. Font 37, Pepe 38. It's a different Ronaldo. He is the centre forward now. He does drift out onto the left still, cuts inside on his right foot, doesn't have the burst of pace, which is, you know, his physicality has been one of his attributes that has made him such a wonderful footballer. And he hasn't got that pace to burst past people like he used to. The stepovers don't seem to have the impact, because he doesn't have that two or three stepovers, then knocks it past the defender and leaves him for dead. But what he does, he gets on the end of things. He's one of those players, like Timo Werner, much criticised Timo Werner. You know, we see some strikers, it's a real dilemma. We see some strikers that go games, we all think they're good players, and they don't have any attempts on goal, and they don't have a shot. And everyone says, well, they're not creating chances for him, you know, whoever it is, player X. And then you get someone like Timo Werner and Ronaldo, who just appear to get chance after chance after chance. Granted, Ronaldo takes most of these, and Timo Werner doesn't. But it's a dilemma for a manager thinking, well, I'll put him on, and he might have two attempts at goal if we're lucky. Or I'll play this one who has 10, doesn't, and misses, needs 10.
Well, as my summary, Terry, of Timo Werner is that he's excellent until the moment that he has to kick the football. Because his movement, his pace, everything, he gets into great positions, as you say. It's just that he can't, it's just when he has to cross, pass, or shoot, that's where it all goes wrong. and the similarity.
Bit of a hindrance, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just apart from that. But the other is not a million miles away from Morata. Again, who is a player who gets, as we saw in the Spain Portugal game, gets himself chances, had loads of chances in that game.
Yeah.
Because he's got all those other qualities. His movement's good, he's fast, he's big and strong. again, just kick the ball in the goal, mate. Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes it is that simple, John. Honestly, yeah, yeah. It really is. I read an article this week about someone talking about Ancelotti, and they went, they said it's great. His team talks about 10 or 15 minutes long, and that's great for us players. And I'm thinking, all these stories we hear about coaches must spend ages preparing and preparing their players. Trust me, they haven't changed. I was like it as a player. As a coach, I realised when you'd lost the players in a team talk or a meeting preparation, you know, building up to a game, that they just want simplicity. As you said, just kick it in the bloody goal. Don't show them statistics and a pie chart and expected goals. Just do your job.
Right, so England. We haven't talked about England. We are both Englishmen, of course. So the rest of you can leave now.
It was Luca Digne. It was Luca Digne talking about Ancelotti Everton.
Oh, right, okay. Right, yeah.
You see him saying, yeah, his team talks are great. They're short. They don't go into too much detail. We all know what we've got to do. And they only last for 15 minutes.
Right. So are England's real contenders to win the Euros?
They're in the pack. They're in the pack. I'm not convinced. You know when you have these betting things, are they worldwide, European?
No,
wide?
No.
Just here. So in France, they're the favourites. In England, we're the favourites, or one of the favourites. In Germany, yeah, yeah. I'm sure. Oh, that's all right.
Yeah. So when you look, yeah. So
I don't gamble.
If you go online and you look,
I don't know how to
name a British bookmaker. That's because they're creating. It's not just. They're not just predicting the chances, they're creating a book, as it were. So basically, if they've got a million proud, patriotic Englishmen all putting £300 on England to win, they've obviously got to bring the England price down. Yeah. Because otherwise they get slaughtered. I mean, they still
it's like
get
the Champions
hammered.
League every year. I always look at the Champions League favourites and think, is that around Europe? Does everyone in Europe believe that this team in the
so
Premier
what
League
I don't
is
know,
win it? Or Bayern Munich? In their bookmakers in Germany, always favourites.
So here's a question for an expert. Can you, if you get yourself a VPN and register yourself somewhere else, as an England fan, are you better off betting with some foreign bookmaker on England? I imagine you are, but I don't know how that, like you, I don't know. My betting advice is always keep your money in your pocket.
I don't know how to bet. Yeah. I really don't. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I've kept away from it. But it's... I think England are in the pack. I would place them as outsiders. I do hear in England constant, but we hear it all the time. With the European club competitions, we always hear that England are favourites to win the competition. We hear it when there's finals. Manchester United, Villarreal, good example. You know, Arsenal, when they played Villarreal, good example. And then, consequently, that makes them the teams look mugs at the end of it because, according to the bookmakers and the media, they've been beaten by a pub team.
Yeah.
So I think that comes into this category. Would I honestly predict England would win it? No. I don't think so. I think there are some issues. Again, I'm not sure who plays, what we're going to play.
Similar,
and I think there's a weakness at the heart of defence.
Yeah, it's similar to Spain, isn't it? And to Luis Enrique. Because I'm thinking, I know this has happened before with England, and it really has, where you're thinking, why don't we know? Oh, have you got to go and do your... Right, hang on. Right, my theory... Terry, go and do your delivery. I'll finish my theory on
One
Spain,
moment.
And then I'll pause it. Right, so my theory, everybody, Terry's not going to hear this now. I don't know why England go into a tournament never quite knowing what their best 11 is. I always thought it would be that way. I'm going to have to pause now because I can hear him chatting to the delivery man. Right, we're back. Terry, I could briefly hear the delivery. I had to pause it in the end. I was about to explain my theory about England, but the delivery man was desperate to have Nick Pope in the team, wasn't he?
So yes, he was.
Did he go around knocking? Everyone he delivers to, does he knock on the door and say Nick Pope should be England's goalkeeper?
And Jordan Henderson should be captain. He's a Liverpool fan. Yeah,
well, I see.
He's
didn't sound like a scouser.
My wife's business and regular delivery. I'm here holding the fort. Yeah. But so he knows who I am and he does have a chat every time we pick up. So as we're in the middle of the podcast, he's then asking me the England team. I don't know if you heard my reply, but I haven't got a clue. Same as Spain.
Yeah. Well, it is, isn't it? So you go into this tournament and I always, naively, I guess, because this has happened in previous years, you think, it's not the preparation. And then you get to the tournament and everyone should know roughly, okay, you know, illnesses, injuries, etc., then disrupt your plans.
Granted, yeah.
But to not have a plan, it just seems a little negligent, doesn't it? So, you know, people say, what formation are England going to play? Now, okay, you've got to be flexible, you've got to have various options. But, you know, to just like, give the impression sometimes that they've all just met each other for the first time. And, oh, right, let's have a look then. Oh, Luke Shaw at centre-back. Well, that hasn't happened before. Marcus Llorente hit right back. You know, I know you filled in there, but it just doesn't seem well prepared enough.
No, you're right. I mean, it's the qualifiers, the friendlies. There really isn't an excuse to go into a tournament, barring the fact that there are that you don't know, and we don't know the best 11. I know it's not important, but of where we should be, that we should know roughly what team are going to start. And but that doesn't appear to be the case. It does appear it's going to be a back three. I think that is built around the fact that Maguire's not fit to start. So it means that it might be tighter defensively to play three central defenders, one of which will be, you would hope, a right back playing in that right-sided position. So it's a tricky one for Gareth Southgate, I must admit, but same as all the other managers.
Right, I think we'll leave it there. That's my internet connection getting a little unstable. So we'll be back. We'll be doing other stuff. We'll be doing some specialist Patreon stuff as well. Thank you to all the Patreons for your continued support as well throughout the summer. It's brilliant. Thank you very much. And we'll be looking at the Euros. We'll be looking at the ins and outs. We'll get some signing over the line, as we now say in the transfer world. Euros starts good because I've been missing the football, Terry. So it's good to have
it
back.
Yeah. I watched one night the other night, France, Bulgaria, and Colombia, Argentina, because I must give a nod to Premier Sports. They've got the South American World Cup qualifiers. I don't know who's got the Copa America. I don't know if that's on show over here.
Don't know. Yeah.
Argentina, Colombia was a good watch. 2-0 up, 2-2 in the end. Argentina let slip a two-goal lead. So football hasn't stopped, has it? I think there's been a couple of days without football on.
Yeah.
And we're cracking back straight onto it. And then I watched a Spain-Lithuania game. But they destroyed Lithuania. It was young against old. Just to finish quickly, it reminded me of being a young player and then an old player at a club. And you have, in training, eight-a-side matches. And it's young v. old or north v. south in some cases. Anything just to get a bit of rivalry. And it reminds me of the old versus young game where the young ones were taking liberties and then the old ones just start putting their foot in and leaving the elbow in. And that's how Lithuania were. It was like this bunch of kids taking the piss out of them at 4-0 up. And then there was a few elbows and someone got broken. I think Manu Garcia got a broken nose from an elbow. It was about the fourth elbow on one of the players left in. And it reminded me of young versus old games that I was involved in as a club in at training grounds. And Lithuania didn't take too kindly by playing the under-21s and getting the runaround.
Well, it was another one. The European Championships was the under-21 championships was another thing that we've had this summer.
Yeah,
and I enjoy watching that. That's good football. It's faster football because sometimes the senior football now is getting a little bit predictable, isn't it? Or a little slower and more coach-led, more tactical.
The South American game, that's what attracts me. It is brutal. Hmm. Barcelona must be scared to death when Messi goes and plays in that game, those games. Yerry Mina kicked him from pillar to post. There wasn't a challenge that wasn't a foul. There's punch-ups, arguments on the bench. There was 8 minutes added on injury time in the first half because Emilio Martinez went off injured after a challenge from Yerry Mina. And at the end of it, you're thinking there's going to be a brawl here because Colombia equalised with the last kick of the game, 1-4. Oh, messed up. Monumentally, he lost my trust as a player. I must be honest. 93 minutes, time running out, last seconds of the game, wins back possession in his own penalty area and decides to dribble out and try and beat three players like Messi. Loses it and then doesn't get back. And then when the cross comes in, I'm watching it unfold and I'm thinking, you've messed up, get back in the box and pick your player up. Oh, no. You can see the cross coming in, see it a mile away, and it's a yard too late. and the header goes in at the far post. And you think, oh, so. And then you expect a brawl after the game because it's been bad-tempered all the way through. Nothing. Hugging, kissing, shaking hands. All very sporting, but just the nature of the game in South America, it's a lot more aggressive than it is here. So I'm going to be watching the Euros, the South American qualifiers, trying to watch the Copa America. Happy days.
Yes, right then. Enjoy the Euros, enjoy the football. We'll be back with another podcast soon.